What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to Bedum Biz. Anthony Frieda here. I got an awesome guest. So I know him as Greg. He's a great dude, great drummer. But his artist name is This Is Torch. So Greg, man, thanks for coming on the show. I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. So I'm going to give it just a little background. I mean, I know you from where we both taught at the same school. I still teach at that same school. And yeah, man, like, I just remember just getting into conversations with you about, you know, specifically about like electronic drumming, not the type of electronic drumming of like on an electronic drum set, the type that I would say, man, as far as having a professional expertise, I think that you definitely have a professional expertise at what I'm talking about, which is essentially just reverse engineering and replicating, like existing concepts of electronic music beats, but on an acoustic kit, right? And I know you also do a little bit of hybrid stuff too, like triggering and stuff like that. But your style, without a doubt, man, never seen anything quite like it. We've nerded out so much about it. And for listeners too, like, immediately go check out This Is Torch. Go check out his website, because he's got a DVD and book, right? Instructional book.
Right. So, well, it's a book, and DVDs at this point, I think, are kind of obsolete, but it does have video content. If you were to get the hard copy book, in the back, they have basically like a download code.
There you go.
You would, you know, have access to the video content that way. But actually, what I really love that Hudson Music did is the way they did their ebook version. It's like something out of Harry Potter, man. It's like crazy.
Really?
And I can show you. I have my iPad here. But in short, you know, you can go. They have the video content basically embedded into like the notation and all that stuff.
Oh, wow.
So, there's little indicators throughout the book that tell you, okay, this is an example you can click on, and a video will pop up, and it'll show you, you know, me playing it. So
that's huge, by the way. I mean, I know it sounds like it's not that we're lazy. It's like you're sitting behind your drum set and you have a book, but then you have to have, I remember back in the day, you always had to figure out, you got to sit near a TV or set up near a TV or something, or have your laptop with you. So that's fucking brilliant that they thought of that.
Oh, brilliant. Since I got my iPad, and I got it for Christmas, by the way, from my wife, Justine. Thank you, Justine.
Shout out to Justine.
It's the gift that I didn't know that I needed, but now I need it.
Yeah, man. It comes in handy, huh?
Yeah, for sure. I'm, you know, both you and I, you know, growing up and learning the instrument, we're accustomed to having your hard copy, you know, drum books.
Yep.
And I'm still kind of old school in that way, that I do like, if I'm working on something, I do like to have sort of that pencil to paper kind of connection where, oh, I'm taking notes and I got to write that down, or I got to circle this, or and you know, you can't really do that on like an ebook version. However, I think it's just so cool and super practical as well. If you are going through the book and you're like, I want to kind of hear how this is done, you just click on it and it pops up. It's like, it's so seamless, and there's no like separate video and separate book. It's just all integrated into one thing. And it's just really like genius how they did that. So, you know,
specifically what we're talking about is trap style drumming. This is your instructional material that you came out. Now, it came out in 2019, am I correct?
2018 is when I got it published.
Awesome. Yeah. So 2018. So it's been about 2 years, man. So
hard to believe. Yeah.
Yeah, man. You got some sort of nomination for like a Modern Drummer?
Yeah.
award too, right? Which is, I remember seeing that. I remember like, okay, cool. So that means that you touched upon something super unique that probably like, it probably was somewhat wanted and needed in, because, you know, it's like we were just talking about this replication of of electronic music to acoustic drums. But like, how many books are actually out there that have a very thought out way of I guess, presenting it so that it's applicable? You know what I mean? So, I mean, it's that's when I saw that, I was like, well, duh, of course, because you put a lot of time into it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That was about 4 or 5 years of research and figuring out how to conceptualize a style of music that has no origins on a live instrument.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and a similar thing happens with styles like drum and bass, jungle drum and bass, but there is an even bigger disconnect when you're talking about things like trap, because there at no point was a human involved in playing, like physically playing that.
Yes.
That started on a Roland drum machine and it evolved from there. It never touched a drum head or a drumstick or any of that. So even from the beginning, drum programmers would be, you know, throwing down these patterns that are just right off the bat super unconventional. But that's exactly the thing that intrigues me about the style, is just and actually just trying to, you know, reverse engineer electronic music as a whole is just you know, whether it's jungle drum and bass, dubstep, if anyone listens to that anymore, tech house, trap, you name it, if you listen to those patterns, it's just not coming from the same headspace as like a drummer, like how you and I think when we get on the instrument. You know, we're used to having roles assigned to our right hand and to our left hand and to our right foot and to our left foot. Mm-hmm. And that simply gets, that whole line gets blurred. Yep. Once it hits, you know, the producer's mind or, you know, whatever you want to call them. I mean, a lot of these guys don't have that background in like, you know, music in terms of, you know, notation and how does one orchestrate on the drum set?
Yep. That's right.
It's just like, hey, I'm able to just program these ridiculous 64th note hi-hat patterns and then have this insane like snare pattern kind of coexisting with that. And it's like, how do you do that in real life?
Interesting, man. It's interesting. And I, by the way, I love what you referenced before when you're talking about jungle drum and bass style and then reflecting it to the trap style. So right. just a little background on jungle drum and bass for anybody who doesn't know. I'm going to start it off, man, but I think you're way more knowledgeable about this shit. Jungle drum and bass. I mean, it's sampled music. A lot of it is sampled beats. The amen break. I'll play it real fast, but it's right. And then they just sped it up.
Yeah, exactly.
So and it can even go faster, some of that music too, right?
Yeah, it can get faster and it can get really chopped up and like, you know, like with a samurai sword and just like rearranged in all kinds of different ways.
Yeah, like chat to chat to chat to chat. You know, it gets cool.
You get a square pusher and Venetian snares that way.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, and then who else are like some of the more prominent artists for drum and bass and jungle?
I mean when I was first starting to listen to drum and bass, the big ones that I would listen to quite a bit were Ronnie Size. Well, you cannot say you listen to drum and bass if you don't listen to Ronnie Size. Diesel Boy, Who else? High contrast. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot. There's a lot. I listen quite a bit to. I mean, that's just more, I guess, for lack of a better term, straight ahead. Gotcha. Right. That's more like, you know, I've often compared Ronnie Size to like Dr. Dre. Oh, wow. He's not Dr. Dre, but if there was a drum and bass version of Dr. Dre, I would say that, you know, Ronnie Size is pretty close to it. So that's, I don't know, that's just kind of like how I think of it. But then, you know, you get into like the IDM territory where it's just absolute craziness. And most people will know the names Aphex Twin.
Yep.
And Square Pusher.
Square Pusher, yeah. And
Venetian Snares.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's when it gets even nuttier.
So that type of music came out, if I'm correct, like, am I wrong, early 90s?
Yeah, I mean, it had a huge kind of wave back in the 90s. You heard it in a lot of TV and film.
Yep.
You know, yeah, it was definitely kind of like a 90s thing. It was big in the 90s. You know, but for people who are like drum and bass heads, they listen to that stuff, like, they'll listen to that stuff forever. And yeah, there's new drum and bass being created now, and it's also like pretty sick, you know. So yeah.
So then, okay, so drum and bass being a human played something, recorded it many years prior.
Yeah.
So then these producers, DJs, whatever you want to call them, were able to manipulate that audio. And then you have drum and bass. They created an entirely new style of music. So now if we segue into what you were talking about as far as like trap, where now they're still samples, but they're not, there's no origin of a human on it. So then now what I like the parallels is there's something about what you're essentially talking about is there's something about drum and bass and trap that are unique as far as the rhythmic content to, and then in terms of how it affects the groove, right? Like it's very interesting to listen to, and super. It's right, like very challenging, even like as far as how do you fit, right?
Yeah, because you know, I have a few videos on my YouTube channel. And every so often I'll get a comment where it's, you know, and they're asking like genuine questions too. They really want to know, because what I'll say, and I'll say this in my book too, is, that trap is just probably, I would say easily one of the most challenging styles that I've tried to play. But if you listen to it, you would never know. It's like if you listen to drum and bass, anyone can kind of tell, wow, that's like hard to do, because it's on the surface, it sounds challenging because it's fast.
Yep.
You need the chops to play it. You know, it's pretty much like spelled out for you. This is like hard music to play.
Yep.
if you're a human being. Trap, on the other hand, it's not sitting at it can reach these tempos, but it doesn't typically sit at like 160, 180, you know, BPMs. You know, it sits more around like 140 and actually has a pretty wide range once you start digging deep, but it's not heard as like a fast style of music. And a lot of those rhythms that you and I can hear as drummers, which are super like high information, right? It's like, wow, it's rhythmically super like complex when you really listen to it. But to your average listener, it's very understated.
Yeah.
When you're listening to a full mix and you have that vocal on top, like that's where your ear goes. But then in the background, you have this, you know, this sick beat, right? And it's just taken as like this whole thing that just hits you. But they're not hearing all those intricate, like, patterns weaving in and out of duple and triple meter and like subdividing and doubling and like doing all crazy stuff. but also like in conjunction with what the snare is doing and what the kick is doing.
Yep.
Those three elements and how crazy that stuff is, like just compositionally when you look at it.
Oh yeah.
Which is cool because in my opinion, that's kind of what it should be. Even if you're playing things like odd meters.
Yep.
And this is just one man's opinion. If you're playing in 13, 16 time, it should still feel like danceable. You shouldn't be so conscious as a listener that this is in 13, 16 time. It should have a flow to it.
Yep. Absolutely, you know? Man.
I mean, if you look at, you know, just like even like, you know, Greek music, right? This Greek music has all these, you know, meter changes or whatever. But it has a flow. It's got a flow to it.
Yeah.
And it's up and down and then it lands. And then it's circling and it's got a wave to it. I don't know if I'm being very abstract right now, but.
No, you're onto something. Cause I know two, musical examples of 15, 16 is the time signature and they fucking groove, man. And, yeah. One of them is, it's a hand drum piece.
Yeah.
River Gregorian is the performer and composer of it. Fucking dope, man. I mean, really, really cool. And then the other one is Now Versus Now, Jason Lindner. Mm-hmm. I think you're familiar with that guy. It's called Future Favela. You know, I mean, it's wicked, man. And it's the energy's high, but the accuracy, I think, is where the money is the accuracy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I mean, that's where the music is too, right? It's like, it just has to feel like music. It shouldn't feel that different from anything in 4/4, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Is it's just, sometimes it can feel like math, and sometimes it feels right, if you know yep. what I'm saying.
Yeah, man, absolutely. So
that's what I'm getting at. And coming back to the trap patterns, that's what I'm saying is that style, when you're thinking about it and how it applies to the drum kit, it's like you have to like rewire your brain.
Yep.
Everything you and I have been taught and have been learning for however many years we've been doing this, suddenly it's like we have to like go inside our head and like pull out some plugs and like rewire and rearrange, because it's just, this style was never meant to be played on drums. There was never right. that intention ever.
Right.
You know? So yeah, when you go to like, you know, reverse engineer it, that's like literally what you're doing. You're like, I need to go and take this thing apart, figure out how it works, reassemble it, and just put it together again, but in a different way, you know?
If you were going to break down, like, essentially, like, your pursuits of, first of all, coming up with this material, enough of it to fill a book, right? If we go all the way back to just where you started with this, I imagine, tell me if I'm wrong, but you had to learn how to interpret the rhythms.
Oh, yeah.
Like, segment them out. This is a 30-second note triplet. This into a 30-second notes, and then 16th note triplet. Like, and then the backbeat's here. You got to make sure you get to that backbeat.
Yeah.
Don't miss the kick. It's got to be right on the click. That's another thing. Is electronic music has, I would say, even the listener is in on it somewhat, where there's an expectation of perfection.
Oh, especially these days, because and you're right. Even your average listener is sensitive to these things by the way, all you producers, all you musicians out there, never underestimate the average listener's ear. Never underestimate, because they know a hell of a lot more than you think. but they have it simplified. If not to like get off track here, but but if they hear something that you make, they're going to be like, this is good or this is bad. That's it. It's not going to be like, why is this bad or why is this good? It's just like, something's off. I don't know how to say what's off, but something's off. And that's it. That's all they'll give you. And they're always right. They're always right.
They're it's always interesting, right? Isn't that interesting too? I think you're right. I mean, I think you're right. I think that, I think it comes down to a, I mean, if you really were to break it down, I bet you it's some sort of the confidence that you're playing with, the intent, the authenticity, energy.
Authenticity, 100%. Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's times I can tell you, like back in the day when I used to hit the subways in New York, because that was a thing that I did with my sax player for a while. So we were hit the subways and busk. And there were times I was down there just to make a dollar. I needed money.
Yeah.
Right? I'm down there. I'm just trying to make some money. They feel that, man. They feel that, and they don't pay you. But if you're down there and you're just having a blast and you're just out there having fun playing your music, they feel that too. And that's when you walk away with the gold.
Yep.
And it's so interesting because it's like this unspoken thing. No one's saying it. They're just feeling it. That's 100% energy, right? Yeah. It's a whole vibe. So you're coming across like, oh man, I really need to pay my rent. no one's into that. But you're down there and you're just trying to lay some hot beats down and make it a party. They know right away. And that's when they buy your CDs and throw in the change. And so that whole period was a cool, like, you know, just lesson in how people respond to a live musician when they're performing.
Oh, yeah.
Your intention is everything when you're up there.
It's kind of like, it's a weird parallel, but it's like, it's kind of weird, but it's kind of like if you're going to go approach a chick not in the bar, you know what I mean? Like she's not expecting to be hit on, you know what I'm saying? Like these people are probably going to work, going to lunch or something like that. They're not expecting to be entertained like that.
Right.
And you know, for you, it's kind of like a, I'm sure you built that like a muscle. How do I affect the energy in this little pocket, this little area here, and get these people into this intoxicating state where actually they're digging and maybe even want to move to what I'm playing?
Yeah, it is, I guess, kind of a muscle, but, you know, for people out there who are wondering, how do you shift that energy and, you know, how do you make it right? I mean, I would just say you just got to go by how you feel. So if you feel, just be in tune with yourself, you know. So if you want it to feel like a party, it will be a party. And then they will feel that, right?
Yeah.
If you want to make money and just like, that's it, that is your goal, that's all there is to it, that's the energy that you bring. Mm-hmm. And many times that's what's funny is you really get the opposite, you know.
Yeah.
If you're doing it for money, you'll be coming from a place of I don't have money.
Yeah.
Then you won't get it.
Humans
are really brutal.
Yeah. Oh my God. Especially in New York, right?
You get the feeling you don't have money. Well, I'm not going to give you any.
I like what you said, though. It's like, you actually have to be the audience. You have to be your own audience member first. What I mean by that is, tell me if you agree. You got to play and listen from the outside, and you got to see, do I feel like dancing to this?
Oh yeah, 100%.
If you don't like what you're playing, if you don't like how it sounds, and you don't feel it, if you don't feel it, nobody's gonna feel it.
Right.
I think that's that simple.
The lesson is that they feel what you feel. Mm-hmm. So you have to center yourself and get into the right headspace for you so that they can slip into that.
Yes.
You know, if you're, you know what I'm saying? Like they're sensitive. That 400 person crowd or 2-person crowd, they feel that. No one understands it, but they feel that.
Yeah.
The best thing is to just, you just got to be in tune with yourself. Mm-hmm. That's it. You know, I mean, I know that has nothing to do with the trap stuff, but
no, we're going to swing it back around because it still highlights something that's important. Because what I was essentially what we just talked about there was the stuff that has to happen after what we were talking about, which is you learn to interpret these patterns into actual in a way where you can reproduce it up here mathematically. Then you have to get your hands and feet to be able to do it. And right. And you know that's just orchestration, like you used that word before. It's a perfect word. You're orchestrating your hands in a way to be able to fill the role of the actual drums, kick and snare, but right. while stimulating the complexity of those grooves, which is usually on the hi-hat and whatever other white noise sounds.
Yep.
And then that just means you actually have to have rudimentary skills, like basic shit, man. Double singles, paradiddles, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to be super accurate.
It's the things that are challenging about the style are not the things you would think. There's the obvious ones, which is the technique. Trap is definitely a style where you got to have a very developed sense of technique. But to go even further, you know, people can play fast doubles and fast singles, but to get the sound, you have to play singles and doubles a certain way, right? It can't, if you listen to the hats and the snares very closely, there isn't this, it's very like robotic and programmed sounding. So, I kid you not, like I'll spend time just doing doubles and making sure that every stroke that happens is at the same like velocity.
Yeah.
I'm going to use that term because I like to use terms like velocity and quantization because these are production terms.
Yes.
And that, again, we talked about headspace before. It's all a psychological thing. If I think like a drummer, then I'll play like a drummer. If I think like a drum machine, then I'm more likely to play like a drum machine. And what this style, to me, when you talk about vocabulary in a style of music, those little things, those little details are what make that style. So if you're playing electronic music, you have to think of things like metronomic timing,
mm-hmm.
precision, and in your rhythms. So, you know, precision, quantization, space between the notes, velocity, dynamics being flat, even.
Oh, yeah.
It sounds like a machine gun. Yeah. It can't sound like, you know, like to take a jazz approach to it and you know, which jazz, it's its own thing, right?
Yep.
And when you listen to someone like an Elvin Jones and he does like a press roll or something, there's an imperfection about it, but that's what makes that stuff, right? And that organic quality, that kind of imperfect, like human thing is what you want for that style of music. That's what makes Elvin Jones, Elvin Jones. But if you're trying to play like Mike Will Made It or Metro Boomin, it's not the same thing. It's I need to be very meticulous about this. And that's why, actually, if you go to the book, aside from the very first, you know, section, all the front material, which is just getting into, you know, basically doctoring up your drums to sound more like that style, the very first chapter is strictly hi-hat patterns, and that's it. That's what we focus on.
Wow.
That's it. We're not going to get into like kicks and snares yet. There is that. I have an ostinato figure because you do want to try that stuff, you know, try the hi-hat stuff with it. But I think I also kind of recommend that the first pass is like, just do hi-hat. In fact, just do this on your practice pad and just try to get the sound right. You know what I mean? Because if you don't have that sound, then it's not going to sound like trap, you know? So it's a lot more about the sound than you think. You know what I mean? I've seen some people on YouTube or whatever, Instagram, who are kind of dabbling with the style. And first off, as a teacher, I'm going to say, keep going. That's awesome. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's more people should try the style. But the other side of the teacher in me is saying, you got to make sure, if you have this book, to pay attention to the very front end material of the book. It talks about what kind of sticks to use, or at least sticks that I recommend you use. It has some practice tips, like what we were just touching on. When you're playing these rhythms, you have to really listen to the sound. It's not simply playing a double stroke or a single stroke. It's playing these things a certain way to create a certain effect.
Yes.
You know, you're not going for the same sound of a double as, like I was saying, like Elvin Jones would play it. That's not in line with the sound that Metro Boomin is getting, right? So yeah, it's just the whole approach changes. And that's what we were coming back to, how we kind of started this, is we have to go in and kind of almost forget everything we learned for a second, like how to play our rudiments, and rewire ourselves to play the same things but differently. You know what I mean?
Absolutely, man. Spot on. I was gonna even say, like, I'm so glad you touched upon it, which was to doctor your drums to sound like the style of the music, which is a whole thing in itself, man. That could take years, right? I want to explain that for any listener. What's the best way that you can describe that?
The sound of trap, in terms of how to emulate that on the kit.
Yeah, like what specific things do you do without giving away everything? But right. What are the features of trap that you have to, and then versus how a drum set comes usually, mm-hmm. And then what you would do to achieve some of those sounds.
Right. Well, I guess I can preface that by saying that actually, before I got into doing that, I had to listen to literally thousands of tracks. This was as part of my research for the book and just trying to learn how to play the style. So you want to be really well acquainted with the sonics of the style. So right off the bat, hi-hats. We're not using 18-inch crash cymbals as hi-hats. We're not using 14-inch hi-hats for this style. They're too deep sounding. Mm-hmm. And so if you listen to trap, they're very high end and very tinny and like piercing almost. So that's the first order of business, is like, I need to get my hi-hat sound right. So that means I got to dig and I got to dig. And it will probably require a little bit of a search and maybe less of a search now, because I think, you know, cymbal companies are getting a lot more hip to it, but yeah, it's like, you're not going to find like mini hats everywhere you go. And putting two splash cymbals together doesn't necessarily cut it.
Yeah, it's true, man.
You know what I mean? I've tried that. You have to know I've tried that, because it's the whole, throughout the whole process, it's like, well, yeah, that's as a drummer, that is the first thing my head goes to, is, oh, well, I'll just shrink down the size of my hi-hats and that'll solve the problem.
I gotta tell you, it's been about a decade and I can seriously, no joke, tell you that I probably have spent a little more than $1,000 in my pursuit to find those types of tight, high-pitched hi-hats.
I can believe you, because I feel like I've noticed every at least periodically, yo, 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 on social media, I'm selling such and such symbols, because it's like you bought something and you struck out and you're like, ah, well, I don't need this now. Anyone want to buy it?
So true, man. Yeah.
So, yeah. So it's in the same process goes for, you know, the snares, like, who, you know, thinking about the snare sound and trap music now, keep in mind, I mean, there's, generally speaking, there's two distinct worlds of trap. There's like the original world where it all began, and then there's like what most people refer to as EDM trap, which is, to me, is kind of a blend of like dubstep with trap elements. So gotcha. You kind of have that, you can have that kind of fat sounding snare. Mm-hmm. So there is that, but and then, you know, since that, it's kind of branched off into all these like little mini subgenres too. But generally speaking, you have, you know, clap sounds, and you have very high, crisp, tight sounding snares. So if I see someone, and I see this more than you know, someone trying to play the style, they're using normal hats. They're using like a deep, like 14 inch snare. And again, this is no diss. Keep going, keep doing it. Like, at least practice the patterns, right? It's practice is practice. But if you want to really come across and play the style and have people, your average listener, like what we were talking about before, they're going to know if it's right or wrong. It's going to be that simple. And if you play something for them, and they're going to be like, hey, oh, that's some cool jazz that you're playing. Wait, that's not what I'm going for. Yeah. I've been through this, by the way. So I'm speaking from experience. But then on the flip side of that, they'll be like, yo, this is some cool trap, right?
Yeah.
And that's when you know you've done it. Throughout my kind of journey here with my band Sistine Criminals, and we've done the drum and bass thing, we went through a whole, you know, we've had several different eras of or what's the word I'm looking for, I forget, it's escaping me, but iterations, right? We have like different iterations of this band, and our goal has always been to play electronic music. Mm-hmm. But we didn't really reach the point where people would start to call it that until like much later, because we were still shaking off all that jazz stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so we would be like, hey, you want to hear some drum and bass music we made? And then they listen to it. Yeah, this is some cool jazz music. Like, wait a second. It's not what we were going for.
Yeah.
Right. So people hear it like they hear it. They're going to be, it's right or it's wrong.
That's right. So,
yeah.
So, okay. That's cool. So, doctoring your drums to sound like the style you're trying to play is, it's hard to do, but it is very important, without a doubt. It helps the translation. You're trying to, it's gotta be sort of undeniable. Like it could be, I'll be honest with you, I think I've done some faux trap shit. Mm-hmm. like where I just take the pattern, you know, and it's just something that, whatever, I'm fucking around. Like I find a pattern that sounds cool. It sounds like it would fall in the trap genre. So I wasn't really trap. However, the sounds, like the goal was, so your goal was like, when I play this, it's trap, period. I don't want anything less than it's trap. No
question. Yeah, there should be no question.
My goal was always like, could I get people to go, it sounds like you're going for that trap thing. And I was fine with that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you went all the way with it. You were like, no, I'm not satisfied with that. I want to make trap. I'm the human trap maker, basically.
Yeah, pretty much. That's what I wanted to do. Because I mean, it starts with just being like immensely fascinated with a style of music, electronic music, and just being completely infatuated with the process of, man, like you listen to that drum and bass groove and it's just, it's nothing I've ever heard a human do. You know, I want to sound like that, yes. You know,
yes,
that is what I want to sound like. Not yes. Like, and okay. No, and this is, again, no diss to JoJo Mayer, no diss to like any of the drummers that do it, but that's not what I'm trying to emulate. I'm not trying to emulate a drummer trying to play that style. I'm trying to emulate the style. Like, I want to sound like Diesel Boy, Ronnie Size, yep. Square. Like, that, to me, is the source. You know? That's where it should come from. So, yeah, you know, I wrote a book on trap, but I encourage whoever gets their hands on that book, take it from me. Like, you can check out what I'm doing. That's fine. But check out what the producers are doing.
Yeah.
That's going to do two things. That's going to, number one, you're going to be taking from the source. So you'll sound closer to the style, in my opinion. Number two, you'll develop your own approach.
Yes.
Rather than taking, like, say, my approach or JoJo Mayer's approach or Johnny Rab's approach. Mm-hmm. Be developing your own approach. And if you do that, if you kind of go your own path, that's the funny thing that happens is you're going to find unique ways of doing this stuff yourself. And just think about jazz for a second and all of the jazz drummers that are and ever were and ever will be. I can't count, man. There's like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them.
Yeah.
But the greats, what do they all have in common? They all swing, but they all sound like themselves.
Yep.
Alvin Jones and Tony Williams and Roy Haynes and Buddy Rich, and they don't sound anything like each other. They're all playing the same style of music, but they all have their own musical identity.
Interesting, right?
You hear Alvin Jones from a mile away. You hear Tony Williams from a mile away, and there's no confusion whatsoever. You know?
Man.
So that's what I'm kind of, I guess, advocating here is like, number one, if you want to play the style correctly, in my opinion, don't necessarily listen to what I'm doing and try to copy it. But, and if you like that and you want to copy that, that's fine, man. I mean, it's free. It's free, you know, just go ahead, do it, whatever. But in general, the way that I would teach it is, you know, take the concepts as tools in your toolbox, right? That's what the book is really meant for. It's just meant to give drummers kind of a blueprint, you know, here is a way. A concept, a blueprint for like doing this, right? Mm-hmm. And then a large part of that concept is that you just have to listen and listen and listen to the music and develop the vocabulary and come up with your own unique ways of doing this, you know? Because that's just gonna create more and more like unique takes on the style. You know what I mean?
I mean, it sounds like, and you're stimulating my mind with this, because now you're from this angle that you're giving is, I mean, dude, a drummer could cut their teeth in this book for years, right? And walk away, not even playing trap and doing something totally like unique in its own right, maybe with other musicians. And maybe it's like something, like a unique sound.
Right. You can use this book, walk away, and it won't be trap at all, but it'll be something completely cool and brand new.
Yeah.
It's really just a vocabulary book when you think about it. It's based in a trap style. It's taking the vocabulary of trap, but who's to say you can't integrate that with, you know, some other style like funk or rock or whatever. Who's saying you can't do that? There's no rules, you know? Yeah.
I liked, by the way, I liked when you mentioned about the, the drummers sounding, those drummers sounding like themselves. And I haven't talked to a drummer in a sec about this type of stuff. Mm-hmm. You don't mind taking a little tangent with me.
Sure.
What do you think that is? What do you think, how does that happen? Because it is interesting, because I have two stories of, I won't tell them both, but I have, to sum it up real quick, two different drummers. This is different points in my life, but I've basically been able to identify them drumming from just listening.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't playing anything. It wasn't like they played a specific lick, you know what I mean, that I heard them play. It was just, they were playing, serving the music. But I was able to go, I think that's so-and-so.
Right.
And I was right both times. And, you know, one of those times, the person next to me goes, it's really impressive that you're able to do that. And I told that person, thank you, but it's actually more impressive that the person was able to sound so much like themselves that I could pick up on that.
Exactly.
So what do you think, how is that, how does that happen? What do you think, man?
Do you mean like, how do you get a sound, or how do you develop the ability to pick out someone else's sound?
How do you play, and I guess it's organically, right? How do you get a sound that is like so yours?
Your own musical identity?
Yeah.
On your instrument? Well, to start, really, it does, the whole thing, the whole process, the whole journey starts with imitation, right? So you're going to go through a great deal of just copying people. That's just everybody. I remember like copying Billy Cobham, like learning all of his drum fills, like listening to those Mahavishnu records over and over and over, and like being able to sing everything that I heard. You know what I mean? It's just, so you go through that period, and that's very, very similar to like learning a language. And that's what it is. It is a language. So, you know, if you're trying to learn Korean, you know, you have to listen to it a lot and you have to imitate it, and you're not going to sound like a native speaker at first, and you may not sound like a native speaker ever, but you may get to a point where you're pretty fluent with it. Mm-hmm. You know, if you listen to it enough and study it enough. And so at first you have to just kind of get the language inside of you. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And that's the same thing with drumming or any instrument you play. Is if you're a drummer, you got to get the drumming language inside of you. So you have to listen to the greats. You have to figure out what your taste is. What are the drummers that I like, that I gravitate towards? For me, I went through many different phases. I idolized like John Bonham for a while. And then I moved on to, well, actually the very first drummer I think I idolized was Dave Grohl with Nirvana.
Yep.
And then all of those grunge bands when I was very like starting out. And then it went into like John Bonham, and then it went into Billy Cobham, and then Jeff Tate and Watts. And then it's just every period had a guy that I was like, yep, man, this is my guy. Like, I want to be Billy Cobham. I want to be Jeff Tate and Watts. And that was all the way through, you know, going to Berkeley and everything. Like, I basically wanted to be Jeff Tate and Watts when I was at Berkeley. And that's how I played. I was in the practice room and I was trying to play like Jeff Tate and Watts. Right. So yeah. I was like a parakeet, just copying every damn thing I heard, listening to everything he did. And I was trying to emulate that. But then a very, 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 very important lesson I had with Ralph Peterson. In this lesson, we didn't really do much playing at all. It started off with me playing, but then he like stopped me, right? And he's like, you know what? You sound like Tane, and you sound great. Like, you sound like a good drummer, and you sound like Tane. But he's like, but now it's time for you to sound like Greg, right? And that changed everything. I was like, man. And this wasn't something that I've always wanted that. I've always noticed that quality in the greats. I would always think, man, you know, no one sounds like Tony Williams. No one sounds like Elvin Jones. No one sounds like these guys that I listen to. They all have their own thing, and that's what makes them them. And that's what I want too. And I had that obsession, you know, even before that lesson with Ralph Peterson. But you know, again, you go through this whole period where that's what you do. You have to learn the language of the instrument, so you learn how the guys from, you know, who came before you, how they did it. But then he sort of made me realize that I reached a point where, okay, you know what? Now is the time for you to start exploring shit in your own way. Like find out who you are on this instrument, because you have something to say. Everyone's got something to say. So figure out what that is and say it, you know?
Gotcha.
So it reached a point where it was like, okay, so now it's not about trying to copy people. It's not about trying to imitate so much, because you reach that point where you know how to play the thing. You know how to play this instrument now. So now what do you have to say? What kind of statements can you make? So it sort of starts with, what's your mission? Like, what are you trying to communicate? What are you trying to bring? What is your, what are you trying to leave here for everyone else when you're gone? What is the legacy that you want to leave? So for me, you know, I had gotten into experimenting with electronic music. I wasn't fully committed. I was still very much in the jazz realm, but I had started dipping my toes into drum and bass music, and that's where the interest began. And then I guess when it really clicked was when I heard a sound recording of my band, who had just formed, Sistine Criminals. We just formed around this period, and we used to record, and I listened back and I started to notice that there was something different about this, right? When I listened to myself playing jazz, I didn't hear anything unique. I just heard someone copying somebody else, and I didn't have anything to say. I was just kind of regurgitating this stuff that, you know, you might as well just like get a book and like recite it. Like, that's kind of what it is. It's like all these great drummers had written the book on playing drums and jazz, and I was just up there like reciting it, you know? So it wasn't anything that I hadn't heard before. It was just me just kind of like regurgitating all the stuff that everyone else had already done. But this one point, and I remember where I was in Boston, walking by Tower Records, or at least what used to be Tower Records. And I was like, wow, like a ton of bricks, man. Okay, this sounds different. Like, maybe I'm onto something here, you know, maybe I have like a thing with this. And that it was inspiring enough for me to pursue it, you know, pretty hard. So that's the beginning. That's the beginning of where it's like, okay, this is the path. So you figure out your path and what it is you're, you know, it kind of starts there where you're like, okay, I have a sense that something is different here. And then kind of throughout that whole kind of journey, you know, you're always looking for things that will set you apart. So a lot of that is keeping a finger on the pulse of what's happening too. So what are all the drummers doing right now? Mm-hmm. What seems to be the most popular thing that is happening? What is trending on Instagram or whatever? Mm-hmm. If you know what that is, don't do it. That's the kicker.
Nice.
If everyone's playing gospel chops, don't play gospel chops.
Mm-hmm.
Go the other way. Go the other way. Right. If something starts to become too too prevalent, too widespread, too much. Like everyone's doing it now.
Yep.
It's played out. It's played out at that point. So for me, diving into the trap thing, I had many reasons for doing it. It wasn't just that I enjoyed playing the style, but I also felt that there was a little bit of a void. I wasn't seeing many, many drummers. In fact, I don't remember seeing, really any drummers doing it when I started, at least exploring it, right? Drum and bass by that point had been pretty established, like that wasn't really a new thing. Mm-hmm. Johnny Rabb and JoJo Mayer and KJ Sokka had sort of mm-hmm. claimed their crown.
Killers, by the way. Killers.
Oh, God, yeah. And
especially KJ, man.
Yeah, I know. I say the same thing. But like each in their own right, each bringing their own take. And that's my point, getting back to what I was saying earlier, is they're all playing the same style. But KJ does his thing, JoJo does his thing, Johnny Rabb does his thing.
Yep.
You know what I mean? It's like, I'm not going to go to JoJo if I want to hear what KJ does.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to go to Johnny Rabb if I want to hear what JoJo does. Like, yep. They do it their own way. And that is exactly what I'm trying to say. It's like, yo, you can play trap. Do it your way, you know?
Yeah.
But where was I going with this?
Well, the original question was that getting a drummer that gets their sound and that sounds right. Like themselves, like how you think they get there.
Right.
Do you think the music that they're playing has anything to do with any influence? How much influence does that have? Like how much influence did the music of Led Zeppelin have on Bonham, for instance, or Dave Grohl, Nirvana's for Dave Grohl? You know what I mean?
You're asking... The band as a whole, does it influence the drummer's sound?
The drummer finding a sound. Do you think that the music that they're playing,
I think so. You know what? It's a good question, and I'll say this. I can definitely say that the answer is yes. At least in my experience, because For the drum and bass thing, the trap thing, what that really required was for me to get involved in a group of people or a band, right? Like-minded musicians who are thinking the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually introduced to electronic music because of my friend and bandmate, Aaron Burnett, saxophone player. He's toured with like Esperanza and he's done some stuff. Okay, talk about original sounds, not to like, divert, but there's no saxophone player that sounds like him. He's got what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's just kind of a side note. So he introduced me to the whole world of electronic music. And then together we just had a vision. And so I actually, if I had not met him and we decided that's something we were going to do, there may be a good chance I'd still be doing, some jazz stuff. I'm not saying jazz is bad. I'm just saying, I may not have adopted the mindset of trying to do something different or new or whatever, you're totally influenced by the people you're surrounded by. And so if you want to, if it is something that you value as a musician, that you would like to do something innovative, original, whatever you want to call it, then it would be a good move on your part to find other musicians who think that same way.
Absolutely. Without a doubt.
Yeah. And so, the answer to your original question is yes. I think that, the most successful bands that you're talking about, Led Zeppelin, Nirvana, they were groups of people who got together with a like-minded vision, and it culminated into their sound. So
yeah,
John Bonham, well, Led Zeppelin would not be Led Zeppelin without John Bonham.
Without a doubt.
They would, no one would buy it. No one would want to see that band if it was someone else.
Yeah.
Right. So
true.
It's like a recipe, you know, if you have that perfect recipe, you can't substitute things. It just won't be the same, you know?
Yeah, because you were saying all good things about from the drummer's side as far as approach to practicing and specifically getting out of that imitation phase, which, man, sometimes I feel like I'm still in sometimes, depending on, I'll see something that really stimulates me from another drummer. I'll go, ooh, I want to play that.
Sure.
You know, which is totally, obviously, whatever, I'm having fun. But I think that when it comes down to it, we are just one part of the music.
Yeah,
we are just the you know, the rhythm, the beat, whatever you want to call it, and there are those other components. And since we are in this transitional phase in terms of instrumentalists, which, by the way, the last 5 years have been awesome, or more actually, I would say it's been fucking awesome to see. I guess our little industry here, as to see instrumentalists, their musical intent and the creativity. It has expanded what they're willing to accomplish as far as making sounds.
Yeah.
I would say the last bunch of years, decade even, has been really interesting to see. Mm-hmm. I think though that is how you're going to get, it's going to, I would say it will probably speed up because mm-hmm. you have to fill a role as a drummer. Mm-hmm. You're sort of challenged. You have to step into that role. So, and if you have other, like you said, if you have other instrumentalist musicians around you to have a similar goal as far as, you know, coming up with, I don't even want to say replicating, but trying to speak in that electronic influenced language, you know, you're going to find a sound, you know. So I guess playing with people is probably the most important.
Key. I think it's definitely one of the most important things for sure. I think another thing to add is to, it's kind of what I said before. But really just having kind of a mission, right?
Yep.
If your mission is just to play good music, totally cool. Totally cool. Yeah. Like that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
For me, I wanted to do something a little bit more than just play good music, you know?
Yep.
I really, growing up and studying this instrument, I really, really, really admired those drummers who left their mark, who did something for the music, and they're going to go down in history.
Yep.
They're already written in the history books for having done what they did. And so I'm not saying that that's what, I'm going to do, but one can dream, you know what I mean? And one can hope. And so, that's one facet of what I'm trying to do is I want to play some cool music.
Yeah.
I want to challenge myself. Because trap kicks my ass and electronic music kicks my ass. So I have to do something to get my rocks off. Right. but also I want to try my best to follow in the footsteps of those people that I admire to me, they are like, you know, like you look at John Coltrane. It's like, man, this guy's a god. He's a music god. Like,
yep.
I know people say Eric Clapton is God, but no, like John Coltrane is God, right? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So like, again, not in any way saying that that's what I'm going to be or any of that stuff. That's
I know what you mean though. I know exactly what you're talking about.
It's not for me to say, like I said, one can dream, one can hope, and one can try their damnedest to get there. And so, for me, like doing the book and choosing that path and just deciding this is what I am. This is what I stand for. This is my mission.
Yeah. What I like too is what's really cool is that that you actually have musical application that exists out there that people can with Sistine Criminals, for instance. You know, like I mean, it's funny, like all this stuff is, you know, it's you're trying to conceptualize trap music and put it on an acoustic instrument, replicate it, right? And even that, conceptualizing that could be a little bit of a mind fuck for anybody who's not, doesn't have a certain, you know, musical knowledge, I guess. Mm. So what's cool is to translate that, to help translate that is you are in a group of musicians, with a group of musicians who are doing that, who are making that type of music. So they instantly see the application of what you're talking about in that book.
Yeah. 100%. Yes. Yes. I mean, you can't say all this stuff and be like, you know, where's the music? Like,
that's right.
I like what you're saying, but can I see it? Can I hear it?
Right. You know? That's right, man.
I'll admit, man, I've been a little bit slow with that process too, but, you know, we are putting out music now post trap book release. So in fact, we have a song coming out this Thursday, New Year's Eve.
Awesome.
Not to spoil it, but it's a trap song. Nice. So whatever, if I spoil it, I spoil it. and actually I can premiere it on this podcast if you want.
Well, by the time this comes out, it will be the new year, so it's not not it's not spoiling anything. It would have been already released, right. So feel free.
Sure. Okay. Cool. Yeah. So I have a few things that that I could play. I'll play that one first. I have the trap one coming out this Thursday. I have there's already a song out. That's a drum and bass track that we did, and we put it out last May, June-ish. And then what else do I got here? There was another thing. I just threw this together like this past weekend. There was a Ken Lewis. Do you know who Ken Lewis is?
I don't. Hold on. I'm so sorry, man. It's so funny you said that because you said the name. It didn't register. I know what you're talking about because you posted about it and I checked it out. I follow that guy now. So it was was that like a competition of some sort?
Yeah. So he has this, he calls it Mixing Night, and it's a YouTube channel of his. And for people who don't know who Ken Lewis is, really, you just have to Google him and that'll say everything. But in short, Ken Lewis is like one of the top mixing engineers in the music industry. He's worked with Drake, Alicia Keys, Kanye West, Bruno Mars. Like, yeah. So he's got, I think he just got his like 102nd like platinum record now. So the guys, you know, he's kicking ass, man. Like, you know, and he's definitely a person you want to like be learning from if you're trying to like up your mixing chops, which this guy right here is trying to do. He's a guy to learn from, and he is. I often wonder why he does this, but he's just so generous with his knowledge, and he's putting out all of this information. And it's, for me, I went from like really not knowing how to do it, like how to mix a track, to like literally 6 months later, I'm mixing tracks and releasing music. So, wow. I mean, he's the guy. But long story short, I don't want to keep going, but so he has these things he holds every couple of weeks, and they're beat challenges. And so I've entered two of them. The first one, I came in second place, which is still awesome. I was still like, wow, I came in second place. That's crazy. And then this last one, I actually won. And you should have seen me in my apartment bouncing off the freaking walls. Like, I really can't describe to you the feeling that I had. I've never had that feeling in my life. But I was just like, this is crazy. This is like crazy. How did this happen? But, you know, anyway, let me see if I can cue up that song that I was talking about. This would be the System Criminals release. I'll talk a little bit more about the process of how we made this. But for now, the song is called The Lover, and it features rap artist Mike Larry Draw.
Just wanna stun, riding with some music, having fun. Pass it from the back to the front. I don't really wanna smoke a blunt. Honestly, I just wanna puff that CBD. 1950s, 186, Benz Mercedes. Cruising past a room with some pretty ladies. Books small and they smell always drive me crazy. To the sounds of crashing bodies, have them dancing wavy. Them touching on each other, me joining's a maybe. Asking if I have been feeling frisky lately, I tell her. I love a woman who ain't afraid to speak, who ain't afraid to reach, assertive and an inner freak. Mutants by nature, unlocking our inner beast. Creatures are crawling to the back of a classic. Being grown in these inner seats, I can see that you into me. I'm drawn in,
I'm into you.
I'm so into it,
I'm so drawn to you.
I'm drawn into you.
Somewhere and make love to each other. It don't have to be just you and me. How about we go somewhere and make love? Don't have to be just you and me. Till it these fantasies, you bring your friend with you, I bring mine with me. Toys included, you gon' need some extra batteries. I'm a naked director, creating the masterpieces. You build a wall, I break the wall down, it's very free. When I have learned each of your patterns and sexual sequence, I touch them all, switch it up, patch whatever's leaking. I am the lover.
Lover for you, girl, don't ever slow down, nothing.
The way you like it, I'm in love with it. I ain't fighting it. Let it breathe. Yeah. Gotta do it here like that. All it takes is a tap, and I'm swirling off track.
Damn.
That's it.
Wow, man. So I got some questions. Obviously, it's interesting because I actually didn't expect. I always get hit with this with trap, where I get blown away by the complex rhythms, how it falls in with that pocket, right? And then the vocalist blows me away with their rhythms.
Oh, dude, Mike Larry is insane, man. He's insane. I just did another track with him, and he killed it, like, even more. I think he upped this. Like, it was crazy. That's the one that was on Ken Lewis.
Okay, gotcha. So that's something, actually, too, like, if anybody's ever played hip-hop, if you've never played hip-hop, even just regular, like, straight-ahead hip-hop type beats, when you have an MC... You'll know if they're good, if they can rap and you can sit in their pocket. Like, even though I'm supposed to have the pocket as the drummer, but when you're sharing that pocket, when you can, I don't know, man, it's, so this guy was just slated, obviously.
Yeah, man. He's insane.
My other question was the beat produced? Did you perform any of that?
That's what the whole conversation is right here. So it would be ridiculous for me to like say everything I just said and then be like, yo, this, I just like made this on Ableton.
Okay. So that's what I was, I'm like, I got my fingers here.
Like, so
that's
so,
what I was hoping.
Yeah.
Cause now you're my hero. You know what I'm saying? Cause I'm listening to these fucking beats, triple the duple, you know what I mean? And dude, your fucking, precision. Holy shit, dude.
So that's what I'm saying with the whole, like, the finer points of learning the style is it's, you know, you can learn, you know, to play doubles and singles and all this stuff, but you got to play it in a certain way. You got to really aim for that kind of robotic programmed, like, sound, right? So that takes, you know, some developing too. But I'm going to give you all the fun facts of how this song came together. So this song was recorded. It's a one take recording. All right. Now it doesn't sound that way, and that's because I'll get into like all the other stuff in a second. But the core of this track is a 100% live performance.
Get the fuck out.
Yeah. So if I were to shoot you the raw stems, unmixed, on all that stuff, it would sound like what you heard, just not nearly as polished. You know what I mean? Yeah. It would just, so you'd hear like the, you know, you hear the drums and they're all like naked sounding, and the keyboards, and they're not like sparkling in the mix and all that stuff. You know, so there's like stuff you do to like post produce and mix and like make it sound like something that people want to actually listen to, you know?
Yeah.
But another fun fact is this is off click, no click, no okay. click was used, zero really? Click. Yeah, it was off click. It was improvised. It was myself, Aaron, and our bass player Nick, and we recorded in a room, like in the same room, in Brooklyn. At a studio called Figure and Ground Studios. And basically, this is just one of a series that we've done this way. Admittedly, I probably won't do it this way again because editing is a bitch when it's not locked to a grid.
Oh, yeah.
Because even though when you listen to it, it sounds like, you know, the tempo's nice, steady, whatever. It's good. Like the timing is good. It's still human timing. It's still imperfect.
Yeah.
So it still wavers in tempo. But I think that's actually what's really cool about this is it has the sonic aesthetic of like a produced track. But when you listen to it, it has the like the soul of like a human being.
Man. I'm still blown away that you improvised that too. So well, like,
and we were thinking ahead too, because we were like, well, if this goes the way we want it to go, if this goes the way we plan it to go, people are going to have questions. And that's why we filmed it. So,
oh, word.
So we do have footage of us, actually like recording this.
Okay.
So if I sync this video up to the footage, you'll actually see like I'm playing those hi-hat ticks and the snare, the buzzes and like the all that stuff. You'll see it.
So, I mean, here's what I'm going to tell listeners right now to do. Because by the time you're listening to this, that means I imagine you'll have a video out for it. You think?
I'm going to have like, we've talked about music video. Probably not going to have a music video, may or may not have a lyric video, but, there will be a way to go and check it out on YouTube. Okay. So, you'll be able to listen to the track on YouTube. It'll be on Spotify. It'll be on like all the different platforms. And then as kind of like a behind the scenes thing, what I'll probably put together is, just like a short sampling of, you know, the track slapped against like the GoPro footage. Gosh. Right. So it's not going to be any like high quality.
Oh, of course. Video. I just for the sake of you doing the take. So listeners, regardless, whatever's out there, go fucking listen to that again. Right. Cause, and then just imagine Greg playing that. Imagine a human playing those drums. And then imagine that he was making those decisions in the moment based on your vocabulary, which goes back to that element of knowing, right? Knowing the style, but, and then being able to translate, you know, that style and then getting it so, so accurate, man. So meticulously accurate, you know, that it sounds like to perfection. I mean, it's, dude, it sounded like it was on a grid.
Yeah. Again, that's, and remember I was saying things like, I like to use terms like velocity, quantization, metronomic timing. Yeah. All of that is for a reason, because you're trying to get into the mindset of essentially a computer. Like, how can I be Ableton? How can I be the Roland, you know, T, what is it? TR-808. I'm like forgetting the Roland drum machine, the 808 yeah. machine. That's how I'm attempting to think. I'm not saying that again. I don't want to make any bold statements or anything like, you know, but I want to say that that's the headspace I'm trying to get into, because if I'm thinking like a drummer, then I'll play like a drummer. If I'm thinking like a drum machine, then that will hopefully be how it comes across if yeah. I'm style. So yeah, when I'm playing the patterns, I'm trying to think like this is a sequenced, it's being sequenced, you yes. know, someone was knocking it out on an MPC, or they were writing it in Ableton, or they were doing it like old school style on that drum machine, you know.
Dude, I'm sorry, I keep having to like remind myself of patterns that I heard before, and then after you told me, I'm blown away, dude. Like I'm fucking listening in my head. I got these fucking patterns that I'm remembering of, and then to think that you played those, and it was just a bunch of fucking crazy 30-second note, whatever, 16-note trip, whatever it was, man. I remember thinking like, that's really accurate. Like, yeah, there are a bunch of rolls, but I still feel the beat. And then to think that you're with your two hands, wow, man, that's like extremely impressive. And going back to what we were talking about before, dude, nobody's playing like this. You are.
I'm trying to. And that's, right. That's what I'm saying is like, I wanted to pick a lane and really go down that path. And like, that's what I do. You know what I mean? And I think that, you know, you specialize in something that you, if you really have that laser focus, you can really, you know, go deep with it. I think that's what it is. It's like, if you dabble in something, that's what you're going to get back is that quality. You're going to get the dabbling quality.
Yep.
But if you're like, okay, you know, as drummers, we're by nature, we're kind of like chameleons, right? We play a little of everything. That's what we do. We play funk, jazz, blues, rock, like that's kind of, and in fact, that's kind of what they sort of teach you to do, like in if you go to like Berkeley or something. But all of that is really coming from the mindset of, you know, if you want to be a working drummer, like
yeah.
you be able to like have some versatility.
Yep.
Right. So yep. there's some validity. There's certainly validity in that. But I think if you want to you know, be like exceptional at something, mm-hmm. right? If that's the goal, is to be exceptional at something, then that's where you have to put your focus.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So once again, I'm that's what I'm striving for, because that's what I believe. I believe if you're gonna be the guy that people look to for a certain thing, then you have to do that thing really, really, really well.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of value in just picking what that thing is.
Dude, man, super successful. I mean, like, holy shit, dude. Like, I can't remember the last time I saw you play in person. Yeah, dude, holy fuck. Like, I wish I actually got to see you play this stuff. Like as somebody who likes to learn and who's interested, it would have been really, it would be just so cool to watch you execute this stuff. Cause again, I'm blown away, man. I'm still in like a little bit of shock, man. Holy shit.
Yeah, no. I have, right. That's exactly. I wanted to, we've been through this kind of thing in the past where we did me and Aaron, we were doing a duo thing for a minute and we did a couple of sets and we recorded them and they were basically like, you know, like house, tech house. Mm-hmm. And we did it kind of like mix style, you know, where it's just kind of like one long set DJ style. Mm-hmm. And so we did that like numerous times live, but we never had recordings of it. So this one time we decided we're going to do that. So, and we got a lot of that same reaction of, you know, oh, you guys didn't play this live. Like, but we filmed it and we're like, well, no, actually we did. See, it's right there. Video or it didn't happen. Right. So it's just, I think because we're trying to go for that kind of realism, I guess that's what you can call it. You ever seen these people who like draw these pictures and they're trying to go for this really lifelike, like almost photographic kind of look?
Yes.
But it's a drawing?
Yep.
I mean, that shit's like insane.
Yeah.
I guess we're not really trying to go 100% there because I think we want to have some of that imperfection there. Because I think that's what gives it the, you want that organic quality, you know, people feel that. But we do want to have like our whole thing from pretty much day one is we want to sound like that.
Yes.
Remember I was saying that earlier when I was listening to Diesel Boy, Ronnie Size, all that stuff. All I could think is I want to sound like that.
Yes.
I don't want to sound like a human doing that. I want to sound like that's what I want to sound like. So that's been the obsession.
I got to tell you too, man, like the fact that you're able to execute these patterns, but I actually think the thing that I'm most excited about is that you guys improvised that, which means, first of all, it ties your roots back to jazz, which is fucking awesome. It's, you know, but also like, I think it shows the knowledge of that style, man. You essentially just show you fucking know that style of music so well that you can come up with a basic, you know, like it's like coming up with a form, but you know the language and you know that the vocabulary is so expanded your vocabulary in that world so well that you can dictate moment to moment what you're going to do. That's badass, my friend. That is super cool. I'm most excited about that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Dude, oh, yeah. Well done, man.
Me too. Is that's you got to know that when I'm doing this stuff, and my whole goal is to like sound like that. When I'm able to like get pretty damn close to it, that's what like makes me light up. I'm just like, oh yes, I've been working my whole life practically.
Yeah.
Little drumming life, at least, you know, at least since Berkeley. I've been really working towards this. And it's taken so many years. And only now is it like starting to really like show, you know? So it's that's what's so rewarding to me is you know, you have the sound in your head that you're trying to go for. And then when you're getting closer and closer and closer and you're moving in on that like target, and then you have something tangible like a recorded song or a video, and you're like, that now it's like documented, now I have it, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, that whole thing is like part of why I do what I do, why we do what we do, you know. So but yeah, a little bit more into the process of this, because you know, people are going to want to know, right? Like, okay, like how much of this is, you know, live, how much of this is like post-produced and stuff. So like I was saying before, the core of this is a live performance. So all of the rhythms you're hearing on the drums, those have been played. Those come from my hands and my feet. It was pretty much like, you know, we basically went in the studio and pressed record. We had no idea what we were going to play. I just started a beat and we kind of went from there. So it was an improvised session. My whole thing going into this recording session, when I was talking to the guys, was like, you know what, guys, like, you know, we can sit down and try to write something and try to produce something and then try to perform it. We can try it that way. But every time we improvise, cool shit happens. So I was just like, man, like, let's just go in and just do some shit. Like, press record, no click, just go in and just make some cool shit. And some of it's going to be cool and some of it's not. Some of it's going to be like crap. Some of it's going to be like, hey, we should do something with this, you know? And so this was one of those things where, as we're listening to like however many hours of session recording, we did like 2 days in total, I think, of just straight like improv stuff. And there were a couple like set ideas that we did. This was one of them that happened to be an improvised piece. And we're like, this we should turn into something. Combing through the session and just finding like our favorite segments. Yep. And so this was one of those segments. And so we took the core recording, and then to make it sound a little bit closer to the sonics of the style, there had to be some, you know, post-production. So a little bit of drum replacement. So like the snares will sound like acoustic snares, you know, they'll be the same rhythm and everything. But, I wanted to make it sound like a track, essentially, you know? And so as a producer, you're looking for the right palette of sounds. So I wanted the right snare, the right kick, the right hat sound. So what you're hearing is really like a hybrid live performance and production.
Did you trigger any of the drums and the cymbal and the hi-hat at all? Did you have any triggers on? In the
original recording, I had used triggers. But those sounds were like not great.
You just took the information of the MIDI or whatever that is, the signal of the triggers, and just replaced the sound. Is that what you did?
I'm trying to remember. It might have been a combination of that and taking the actual like audio.
Okay.
What I remember doing is taking the audio. Let's say I have like the hi-hat, right? And it's like the recorded hi-hat that I'm playing. And I'm like, okay, you know, I think, you know, this hi-hat sound, 808 sound would sound appropriate, right? Mm-hmm. So basically what I did is I have a hybrid mix of the acoustic cymbal paired with an appropriate 808 hat cymbal.
Okay.
So, if you were to hear the naked drums, it would sound like, you know, precise and everything, because you'd have to be playing that way in order for the MIDI to pick up, you know, to kick in right, or else you're going to be there for like hours and hours and hours, like tweaking. Yeah. So basically, you have some drum replacement and so you're creating this like sonic that you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, I think in the future what I would like to do is like an all completely acoustic,
whoa,
like not touched with anything, just completely everything. I'm talking drums, piano, guitar, like everything. Real instruments, 100% real instruments, no production whatsoever, just like mixed and like, you know, processed or whatever. But this one, our approach, we wanted the live performance to be there, and we wanted our sound to be there, and then I wanted to kind of like enhance it. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what you're hearing, is you're hearing like an enhanced version of the raw session. And then, you know, there are some things in there that were not part of the recording process, you know, transitional things like whooshes and whatever you want to call them, but
yeah.
Added production. So yeah, this is a hybrid live performance slash production track.
Special. It's very special, man.
Organic timing.
Dude, so it's very special, man. Like, seriously, I'm very intrigued, very excited.
Yeah.
By this, man. It's so cool, dude.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's why I love to do this, man. It's just because it's cool to me too. You know, I feel privileged to like be like a part of it. You know what I mean? To be able to do it and have worked at it, and it's, the whole process has been so freaking worth it, you know?
Oh yeah. Oh my God. I'm reminded of a story, by the way, quick little anecdote that I just remember being in college. You know, we were talking about being in college. And then I remember sitting down in one of the practice rooms, sitting down on a drum set. And look, man, I was taking some like drum lessons. So doing some jazz, right? I also did classical. But specifically on the drum set, I'm sitting there in my free time and I'm messing around with some drum and bass beats that I heard, like just trying to replicate it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, it doesn't sound great, but I'm trying, you know?
Sure.
One of the other students, I'm not going to say his name. One of the other students was like, what are you working on? And I told him, and he goes, why are you even going to bother? Like, why are you bothering practicing that? Like, when are you going to use that? And it's funny. This is an exact right here. This, what you listeners just heard, this is what that can become. Like if somebody said that to you, why are you practicing this drum and bass stuff? Like, when are you ever going to use that? If you bought into that, this wouldn't exist.
Well, the people that ask that question are not forward thinking. They're not. If I had a dime for every time someone said, yeah, trap sucks and like blah, 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 it's like, dude, trap doesn't have to suck. Trap can be freaking cool, man. And personally, I love that music. But people who don't have an appreciation for that style, I've seen them convert because they heard something that, you know, like my band did or whatever.
Ah, shit.
Like, oh, wait a second. Or they saw like a video. I don't know if you've seen the handful of videos I did, the trap videos.
Yes.
So I did like a 21 Savage, a Young Thug, and a Carnage cover. And that's the same thing. It's, you can see that. You can see me playing, and it's the trap stuff. Same deal. It doesn't sound nearly as good as the record I just played you. But that's because, you know, like my production ears are getting a lot better now. But it's the same concept, same exact concept. It's, you're playing it and then mixing it to the way you want it to sound or whatever. But yeah, like, yeah, if anyone told me that, I definitely, you know, it's like, whatever, man. Like, you don't know what you're talking about. You don't, right. Like, those are not the type of people that change shit. You know what I mean?
It's weird to say, but it's like that. That's like saying, you'll never have a computer on your phone. Like, what are you talking about?
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. Like, you, at one point, I forget who said this, but, I can't remember who said this, but someone said, you know, like at one point, people thought it was ridiculous that you could flip a switch and the lights would turn on. Yeah, there really was a point where that was impossible to do. Yep. Like, just flip a switch. Oh, wow. You're telling me all I have to do is flip a switch on a wall and light happens? Like, yep. Yeah. You know, it takes crazy motherfuckers to think of this shit and like actually try to do it, you know, and like,
right.
So you have people like Thomas Edison in our history who did that. And now we can do that. I can flip a switch and lights turn on. And now I can say, hey, Google.
That's right.
And lights we can turn on. You know what I mean?
Right. That's right, man.
So it's, you know, yeah. The people who are kind of like the naysayers, like, why are you playing drum and bass? Why are you trying to play that style? Like, no one plays that. That's a DJ style of music. Exactly.
Exactly.
Exactly. That's exactly the reason why I'm doing it. Because, you know, people like you, not you, but you, whoever that you is, yep. Are not going to be the ones to do that and make things come full circle.
Right.
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 Before you know, you just had one type of drum and bass, but then you had guys like a JoJo Mayer and KJ Sock and Johnny Rab say, wait a second, but we can bring this style of music and we can have it up, like appear in a different light and you're going to get some different results. JoJo kind of has kind of like a almost like a jazzy like hybrid approach,
yep,
to drum and bass. He's not trying to sound exactly like the records. He's doing a damn good job of it, but that's not really what his goal is, at yep. least in my ears. He's not trying to do that. He's not trying to sound like those records. He's trying to sound like JoJo Mayer.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And JoJo Mayer comes from jazz. And he's got this heavy influence of electronic music in his playing. So you get a very interesting byproduct of that.
Right.
And that's why JoJo Mayer and Nerve is cool.
Yeah. You know? Without a doubt.
It's the same thing with like, you know, Johnny Rab and KJ Sokka, and they all do it their own different way.
Right. I mean, dude, like, I'll be honest. I remember this was probably about 10 years ago, almost exactly. I remember just being absolutely bored on drum set and unmotivated. And I think that up until that point, what is this, 2010? So up until that point, man, I was just playing rock, funk, a little bit of funk, whatever. But I didn't feel challenged. And yeah. I remember going to see Wu-Tang Clan live, right? And I remember getting into like A Tribe Called Quest. All that 90s hip hop, Nas, right? And I remember a flip turned, a switch turned on, right? Just like Edison.
Right, right.
And just the idea, wait, I can play these hip hop beats. Like, these are fucking funky, man, these hip hop beats. Like, I'm going to try to replicate them. And then, dude, within a few months, it's funny how you truly, when you start taking on the, what you would think of the unconventional, which is, I'm going to try to play this, replicate these hip hop beats. I immediately, it was like an avalanche, snowball effect. I then discovered JoJo Mayer and Nerve and right. went down this huge rabbit hole of, wait a minute, there are guys who are actually trying to replicate this electronic music. Okay, what were their influences? And dude, it has not stopped since, you know? So yeah. Really, I feel like I've gotten a lot of fuel out of electronic music. In fact, I'll say it is the best challenge of my drumming life, I think.
Same here. That is why I'm doing this myself. Yeah. You know? Simply for the fact that, and this might sound silly to some people, I'll give them that. That's fine. But in my mind, If another human being did it, then I already know that I can do it. Uh-huh. Because that's been proven.
Yep.
Another human being accomplished that, right? So even if it's like the Black Page, you know, like Terry Bozzio played it, he still played it. Okay, so I can also play that if I put enough work in. I already know this for a fact. You know what I mean? I don't have to actually learn it and actually play it. I just know that anyone with a nervous system can learn that music because it was in fact done by a living, breathing organism. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So, but there is this disconnect with electronic music, programmed music. Humans can program it using computers and machines, but the performance is actually done by the machine.
Yes.
So Ableton plays it back. The drum machine plays it back. And that's why the sound is what it is. But that's very different than what a human does when they're doing something in real time, you know? But what if, and that's the big question. That's the question the naysayers that you're talking about, they don't ask this question. But this is a question that like you and I will ask. It's like, well, what if I can do that and sound that way?
Yep.
In already knowing it won't be exactly perfect, but that's kind of what you're trying to add, is you're kind of trying to add that imperfection. You're trying to add that human quality to an otherwise inhuman sound.
Yeah, man. I would say a perfect example of that, and it's true. It's true. Dude, watching him play, I saw him actually play live. It's Chris Dave.
Yeah.
With Robert Glasper Experiment, you know, him and Derek Hodge on. I mean, holy shit, man. Chris Dave, I would say he's given a lot of great ideas to this instrument, without a doubt.
God, yeah.
I mean, truly inspired me to fuck ton of there's years of work that I can put in. Just
insane.
Not right?
Cats come along who are like that.
He's disgusting, man. And he sounds like Chris Dave, you know? Like, there's only one.
There's only one Chris Dave, and he knows that shit. He knows that shit. I just heard from another friend that he took a lesson with Chris Dave, but this was part of like a group, like, you know, like a Zoom kind of group lesson style thing. And everyone had to sign NDAs.
Oh, really?
Yeah, everyone had to sign NDAs. Like, yo, don't be taking my stuff and, like, you know, spreading that around. Like, this is you know, so yeah, like dudes like that, you know, they got something unique. They don't want everybody in the world like knowing what they do, you know, which, yeah. I really understand, man. I understand. Like, you got to have your trade secrets. You got to have your stuff. There's going to be things you share, but then there's got to be those things you don't.
Yeah.
Let everybody know about, because if you do, then you might be like risking your whole livelihood. That's some real shit.
That's true. It's a good point. Cause there are so many musicians now and I think that's, you know,
and everybody arguably wants to have some success at it. So, you know, there are people out there who will try to mooch ideas off of others and for their own personal gain. That's happened. That's been known to happen. So, yeah, you know, people like Chris Dave, he's like, man, I'm like, he's a freaking creative genius on the instrument.
Without doubt.
You know, and a lot of people are trying to cop what he does. And he's like, you know what? It's time to like kind of protect myself a little bit, you know.
Now, in retrospect, good for him.
Yeah, and at the same time, though, like, you know, not too many people can really touch Chris Dave anyway. So,
yeah, he's the dude. I'll tell you a quick little thing. While he was playing with Robert Glasper, I'm actually sitting right behind Chris Dave.
Lucky.
Really cool. I know, dude. It was great. So. At one point, they're improvising, sort of through songs, and he's playing with brushes. So he starts typical, you know, like brush playing. It's rather soft, but then it starts like, you know, they get into it, man. They start fucking getting that's down a little bit. He's hitting that backbeat. He's whacking that thing, right? Then he's hitting crash cymbals real hard. He's beating the shit out of these drums with these brushes. So what starts to happen is now every backbeat bristles are flying through the air, dude, until like people are getting hit on the head.
It's hilarious. Yeah,
it's just like that guy is such an animal, man. Like he wanted that fucking brush. He wanted that fat brush sound, and he was willing to break his brushes to do so. Yeah. At one point, they literally no bristles left. He actually had to go get sticks.
The song, it's like, all right, time to buy a new pair.
That's right. Dude. Man, I'm super impressed. I'm super like stoked about what you showed me. Now, do you guys have, you said you have, do you have other recordings too coming out?
So we have already, so the one I played you is going to be released. And then we have one drum and bass track that we had just dropped like May or June, something like that. Okay. So I can play that for you. And so this is a totally different style, drum and bass, jungle, same exact session. This one, no drum replacement at all. This is the actual drums.
Excited.
Same everything. No click. It's just improvised. And then some cool shit came out.
Awesome. And
this one is an instrumental. So, let me get that one queued up here. And this one's called Particle Collider.
Particle Collider.
Particle Collider. Yeah, let me get the share thing going here. Okay, there we go. All right, yeah. So same part of the same session. We've called this whole series of releases. If we were to release a whole album at once, we'd call it Strange Children. But instead, we're releasing them just as like one-off kind of singles as part of a series from this one recording session, because all of these cuts are kind of coming together the same way.
Gotcha. Right?
No click, one take, improvised, post-produced. That's kind of the concept of the records. Okay, so here we go.
Damn. Nice, man. Really good. Holy shit. Man.
Drum and bass, yeah.
Dude, I mean, it has that drum and bass energy to it, man. Like, it's, yeah. You know, it's like those chase scenes in movies where you're not stopping in one area.
Right.
What's going on and what's the situation is. It's that car is just zooming through that city, but you're in the car. So you are in one place. And I guess that represents that groove, you know, like it's moving so fast, but you feel the car moving, but you're in the car.
Yeah. You're getting hit by the car. You're like cruising with the car.
With the car. That's right, man. That's hard to do. In my dabbling of playing drum and bass, it does feel like, holy fuck, you don't realize how fast it is. You really don't realize how fast it is. It's just so funny how you could be, at the faster tempos, you know when you're behind the beat a little bit, mm-hmm. you know? And with that type of music, you actually just can't be. You're not, right. It's not authentic to,
on top of it. Yeah.
Right. So that dude. And then I love the part in the middle. So obviously you improvise that, which is super fucking impressive because I know you were trying those cut up little, patterns of drum and bass. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So
that was cool, man. That sounded,
like outro, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's my favorite section of the song.
Sounds so good. And then your sounds too. I'll say this because I got excited when you said prior to playing it that this is the drums. There's no sound replacement because that's something I love recording and I love taking the sound of the drums. How can we tune them and treat them so that they sound as close to the original, I guess, intended sound? And you did it, man. You were super successful. The kick had that nice kind of like punchy, you know, chest feeling of it. The snare, man, the snare had that crispy character to it. Really good, man. I love that.
Yeah, man. It's, you know, and again, it's like, with the two different styles, you know, you try to kind of meet in the middle, you know, because each of those styles are two completely different worlds. But the one thing, at least in this context, like with this band, you're trying to meet in the middle with this band being like a live performer of those two styles, you know? So you want to give enough that it's like, yeah, this is a performance,
yep.
But you want to also honor and respect the style and give the style what it needs,
yes,
you know?
Yes.
So, in the drum and bass thing, no drum replacement, nothing, right? It's just because it would make sense. That's how it is because that's how it started, right? Like
right.
It started with the amen break. Those were real drums. That's a real person playing it. It's just that, you know, producers got their hands on it and processed it and did some funky stuff with it.
Which is what you guys did essentially with the whole track.
Exactly. So it's like in the spirit, you know, it's like we're trying to do stuff that's kind of like in the spirit of the style without, so it's like we don't want to disrespect like what that music is, but we want to do it like the way that we want to do it.
Yeah.
Right? And kind of put our spin on it. And so the same thing with the trap stuff is like, you know, I still want to, at some point, I want to do like a fully acoustic, like a concept EP or something where it's nothing but acoustic instruments treated to sound that way. Because I think that would be a really interesting just exploration, you know?
Without a doubt.
But as the intro, you know, like here, you know, here's a band trying this out, doing this, you know, I wanted to kind of be as close to what it is as possible without compromising like what we did in the studio, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, man. Dude, you showed me some killer shit. And again, I'm super stoked that it was improvised. That to me is what I value probably the most. Cause you just put that was all of your musicianship. You guys, you know, you put it all out in that recording.
Yeah.
And there's a communication, obviously that's happening. that synergy. That's important to me. I love that. I love the interaction with each musician is tuned into something.
Right. That's the core of what this band is like an improvisation. Me and Aaron started off as purely jazz musicians, and that is improvisation. That is what jazz is. And we've been playing for such a long time, and we've had this vision together of doing that, but in a different medium. We love to improvise, and we love electronic music, and we want to do them both together.
Yeah.
And so that's what we do, whether we've done it as a sax drum duo in the subways, all the way up to getting in a studio and pressing record and post-producing the raw recordings into a very listenable record. Yeah. You know, so yeah. I mean, it wouldn't be Sistine Criminals and actually it wouldn't be me if it wasn't improv. You know, I have to, that's part of the fun of doing this is not only trying to emulate that sound, but being able to essentially compose that sound, those beats on the spot.
Yep.
It's almost like a writing tool. You know what I mean? Like instead of like getting an MPC out or a MIDI keyboard and knocking out beats that way, I can hook some, you know, triggers or something up to my drums and just, it'll be my sound. It'll be my rhythmic cadences, my flow, my everything that I've been working on for years and years and years as a drummer and in that style. So that's what's cool is like, you'll have by default, you'll have your signature embedded into that sound.
With that, I'll fucking tell you right now, you have your goddamn signature. Because if I tried to sit down and play, reproduce what you were doing, it would take a while. It's just like, I'm telling you right now, man.
It is a lot of work.
Holy shit. I'd have to figure out what you're doing first and then practice it for like 30 days. You know what I'm saying?
Like I said, man, hey, there's that book that I put together. I think a lot of thought went into that. I wanted to make it, I wanted to kind of have it break down, at least in my mind, like when I was listening to all these records and how I was trying to decipher it and make sense of all of it. Mm-hmm. Once I felt I had reached a point where I could make sense of it and figure out an approach that works for myself, I tried to spell that out in the form of a book.
Yeah.
So anyone who is interested in trying to explore this style trap, check the book out. If the order of how the chapters fall, that's the way that I would think of it. I first and foremost, you want to get the rhythmic concept together, the switching back and forth, the weaving in and out of duple, triple rhythms and subdivisions and the different pairings of rhythms, you know? So if you get comfortable with that and then, you know, the articulation and stuff that you play with, that's like, you know, step one. And then putting that together with, you know, the stereotypical like trap ostinato.
Yep.
Dun, dunk, dun, dunk, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely, it can go way deeper than that, but that is sort of the nucleus of it all, right? So there's anywhere from some pretty easy stuff to like very, very difficult, you know?
Well, I think I'm going to pick up this book, man, because I'm actually like in for the challenge, for some of this challenge, actually. I think it would be a nice ass kicker.
It kicks my ass. You kidding me?
For myself, for sure. I'm inspired.
Yeah.
I'm inspired, man. All right, listeners, please go to, all the links are in the description below, but you got to go check out thisistorch.com. The book is called, and the videos are called, trap style drumming. I'm going to tell you right now, totally reasonably priced, like without a doubt. If I think for what you're getting, the amount of work that came into that was put into this to think these concepts through and then write them down, I think it's an incredible price for what you're getting. So please go check that out. Please go follow. It's Instagram.com/thisistorch. Go show them some love and go to Instagram.com/SistineCriminals. That's SISTINE criminals. Yeah, go support these guys. This is fucking dope, man. Well, Greg, thank you so much for giving me like 2+ hours on this. Is a fantastic episode. Thanks for, it's an early preview for me, not so much for the listeners of that track. Anytime you want to drum nerd out, man, on a podcast episode, man, I know you're in LA and I'm here in Jersey, but, obviously we made this work out really smoothly. We should do that. It'd be fantastic.
Yeah.
Definitely want to have you back on. And, yeah, man, I appreciate it.
Excellent. Thanks for having me, man.
Of course. All right, listeners, thank you, and badum biz to you.